I have two of them. I wrote notes on them.
Okay.
Here it is.
Okay, I'm going to call this meeting of the Highlands Development Credit Bank to order. This is our first meeting. Thank you to everyone who's come out to watch us conduct business. And I also want to thank all our new members who've also taken time to come out and help us through our work that we have ahead of us. I'd like to start the meeting by having everyone as our roll call. I would ask everyone to introduce themselves, to describe a little bit maybe where they come from, what their interests are that would lead them to accept a position on this board. And I'd like to start with the chairperson of the Highlands Council, someone who I've had the pleasure to work with for the last 4+ years. And if John has any comments that he would like to make to the board, John is the person who has individually selected every person who's sitting here in front of us. So I'm going to turn it over to John Weingart.
Thanks. I'd just also like to welcome everybody. John Weingart, I've been on the Highlands Council and been chairing it since it began. I spent a long time working in state government in the 70s, 80s, and 90s, and I now work at Rutgers University at the Eagleton Institute of Politics, and I live in Hunterdon County in Delaware Township, which is not in the Highlands region.
I'm Dale Davis, and I live in Chester. We operate a garden center and a farm market in Chester, and currently farm about 500 acres in Chester Long Valley area.
My name is Susan Kraft. I'm the executive director of the state's farmland preservation program, known as the State Ag Development Committee. I'm also the director of the State Transfer Development Rights Bank Board. And before coming to the state, I worked for 16 years in Burlington County, running their farmland preservation and TDR programs.
Thank you for joining us.
My name is Ted Maglione. I'm a Mandan Township resident. I'm also a local builder and developer in Morris, Warren, and Passaic County.
My name is Ken Klipstein. I'm the Director of Watershed Protection Programs at the New Jersey Water Supply Authority. I'm also a resident of Tewksbury Township and the president of the Tewksbury Land Trust. And I spent 20 years at DEP in the watershed program there. Had some involvement early on with the Highlands exemption reviews and some of that work before moving to the authority.
Thank you, Ken. On the phone, do we have any of the directors on the phone? Is Michael Halpin on the phone?
Yeah, Mike Halpin here.
Mike,
yes, just my background. I've been just recently semi-retired, I guess, from the as chairman and CEO of Skylands Community Bank, headquartered in Hackettstown. I'm currently chairman of the bank. I've been in banking 46 years, and I've been in the area over 20 years. My primary interest in being involved here is to look at the economic impact of what the Highlands Act has done, and how, you know, how people can get some equity out of it, the people that will be disadvantaged, I guess, by it. So that's my primary interest.
Thank you, Mike. I'm sorry, Ralph.
Ralph Siegel, Garden State Preservation Trust. Former resident of Morris County, graduate of County College of Morris. I think I was appointed because they knew I could find the building.
Thanks for joining us, Ralph. Eric, are you on the phone? Eric Peterson, a fellow council member of John and myself, will also be on this board, and I believe he'll be calling in at some point. He'll probably identify when he does join us. Okay, a formality. The Open Public Meetings Act, let me just say that in accordance with the Open Public Meetings Act, the Highlands Development Credit Bank has sent written notice of the time, date, and location of this meeting to pertinent newspapers of circulation throughout the state and posted notice of the meeting and the agenda on the Highlands Council website. So what I'd like to do right now is start with the Pledge of Allegiance for everyone who would care to do so.
Pledge of Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the Republic which is sovereign and one nation, under God, the God indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. And like I said, this is an important function that this board has come together to perform. Some of the things that the bank is going to be doing, we're going to be reporting to the council what we do. We're going to, there's a number of documents that everyone has received. I want to call out one item in the master plan that was very helpful for me. Is under the goals, policies, and objectives of the Act. I think it's in Chapter 4. Is a lot of written verbiage about what we're going to be working on. So I would like everyone to start with that. Now, the bank board came together after a couple years of work by the TDR committee. The TDR committee was meeting over the last couple of years, and with the very capable staff and the consultants they brought on, we were able to work through some of the preliminary work. And I think that's really going to help us as we move forward. Now, we know that the bank is, you know, the bank is going to be the mechanism to help anyone who is willingly going to forego or has lost development rights, either in the past or in the future. So the bank is going to be the clearinghouse for the information that is needed by both sides, us and the landowners. We will perform the official functions also as the recording agency for the transactions that go forth. And once we get to the point where we feel we can start considering transactions, we know that we're going to help create that market. We're going to consider ourselves the buyers of last resort, but until we have some transactions under our belt and until we identify places where we can send, we have receiving zones, until we have some transactions moving forward, we're going to end up fulfilling that role. So those are the things that we're going to be working on. Now, what I'd like to do is ask Eileen Swan, the Executive Director of the Council, to introduce the staff that will be working with us, and then I think she'll want to lead into a PowerPoint description of that.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Delighted to have you all with us today, and delighted to be starting off and embarking on the true kickoff for the Transfer Development Rights Program for the Highlands. This has been, I know, long awaited, but it's been a particularly complex issue given the nature of the landscape of the Highlands and the complexities of the program. To talk a little bit about the staff, we're not all in the room with you today. The staff of the Highlands Council will also serve this Highlands Development Credit Bank. And the reason I'd like to have everybody here that couldn't is because the weight of the work that we have in front of us at the moment is such that it's very difficult for staff to get time out of completing the duties as we have embarked on implementation. Just a little bit about us, we have a planning and science staff. We have a geographic information system staff. They do all of the data analysis and mapping. We have a legal staff, and we have administration and financial staff. And totally, we have 23 full-time staff with 5 part-times to assist us. And we do all the work in support of the Highlands Council, crafting of the plan under the direction of the Highlands Council, and now implementation of the plan. The work of everything we do, really, in this office is a team effort. The staff are very committed to their work, they're committed to the cause, they believe in what they do, and consequently, it's very obvious in the work ethic that is in this office. Even though it's always a team effort, there are people who lead in different areas, and certainly as we speak about TDR, I'll talk more about who leads in that area. I'd like to first introduce Tom Borden on my right. Tom is the Deputy Executive Director. He's also Chief Counsel. So he assists us and advises us on legal issues, along with everything else he does. All of us wear many hats. We don't have the luxury of doing any one function. So whatever the title is, we're all jack of all trades. And I'd like to think master of some. But that's Tom's role here. And we together do a lot of information meetings, and we'll see some of what we do in this PowerPoint. To my left is Jeff LaJava. Jeff is truly the architect of our TDR program. He has worked extensively with experts like Susan Kraft and in the New Jersey State region with John Stokes from the Pinelands. And he's worked with other experts such as Charlie Seaman, who worked with us on some of the issues. He's based in Florida, but he's a land use attorney and a planner with great experience in the state plan of New Jersey, in transportation planning, in the Pinelands itself, and indeed assisting us with the Highlands Plan. He worked with Jeff as well. Ralph Siegels from Garden State Preservation Trust has assisted us as an expert as well. So we've been very fortunate. Jeff also brought consultants on board to make sure that we could understand the complexities and evaluations across the area. As executive director, I'll be working primarily through Scott when it comes to the Highlands Development Credit Bank, John when it comes to the Highlands Council. But if you have issues, you need material, questions you want answered, you can feel free at any time to pick up the phone and call me. And if you want to email me, the BlackBerry goes everywhere I go, even in the car, but don't tell anybody that I have a dream of using it there. I pull off the road, obviously, to check my emails. So just know that I'm readily available at any time, and if I need to get staff to assist you, I will do so, and I'll get back to you as promptly as possible. What we'd like to do, I beg your pardon, I forgot to introduce Paula. I know some of you have already been dealing with Paula. Paula is my executive assistant. Her background has been in land preservation. She actually worked with the New Jersey Water Supply Authority before that with the Upper Raritan Watershed Association. It's the kind of caliber of staff that we pull together here that we want people who've been committed to this type of work. And Paula is, she does many, many functions for us, but she will be working with you a lot in terms of setting up meetings and making sure that things run smoothly. And making sure that we're all in the right place at the right time, and packets, and making sure, assisting us in getting things up onto the website, all those kind of issues. And Rich, I nearly forgot you sitting behind me. Rich Botchke is our manager of information systems, and he's our computer guru. When all fails in here, whether it's 24 hours a day, Rich is in to make sure we get up and running again. He makes sure today that we have all our recording devices. We always have a backup system, so should one system fail, we have another. Those that wish for a particular kind of torture can listen to the meetings online. We post our meetings as soon as we finish our council meetings, and we'll post these meetings as well. So that for those that want to hear them over and over, you know, feel free. And Craig Garrison is our communications manager. Craig does our press releases, helps us with our presentations for the public. He's the conduit to getting information out there, making sure that we're very transparent to the public, which is critical to this organisation. The Highlands Council has always prided itself on being very transparent. And with that, I'd like to encourage you to go on the website, which again, Craig manages for us. The website has a wealth of information. Pretty much everything we do, we try to get it up there so that people don't have to call this office and ask us for things. They can go to the website. There are interactive mapping tools available that at a block and lock level or by input of a physical address can give you all the information practically that we've compiled at a block and lock level. So whether you're looking to create a map or to see what kind of constraints are on the land, all of that is available online. And we're currently designing a tool that will help the HDC Bank as well in its work. So the technical documents that are the work basis for the plan, all of those are available online. We've got a page created for every single municipality of our 88 so that we can track what they're doing with us as well. So feel free to go on that website, and if you want to bring us up to date, if we miss anything, let us know. With that, I'd like to turn you to look at our presentation, which will be on the screen behind you. What I'm going to do is talk to you a little about the functions of the council the work of the plan and bring you up to date on that. And then Jeff will take over and talk to you a little more about the TDR program. First of all, to put everything in context, planning is not new in the state of New Jersey. We recognize that. We've had a state plan which has been a guiding influence for the state of New Jersey, and here we show a picture of it, state plan from 1934. And indeed, amongst us today in our audience, we have Larissa Whitaker. Larissa, you might wave, please. Larissa is from the Office of Smart Growth. She's a planner there. She works on TDR, and we've got a close relationship with the Office of Smart Growth when it comes to transfer of development rights. And Larissa also has worked with Susan on TDR matters. Larissa's office also is responsible for the state plan, which continues to guide us, and we are sort of an outgrowth from the state plan, as I'll show you in a few minutes. If you look at the map, it's, you know, when you look at the natural areas that were seen at that point in time, things haven't changed. The hills didn't move, and many of the forests are there, and they've been protected as best one could. However, there was a need seen to do more in this region. This is the state plan today. The areas that are shown in these kind of green and tan colors are generally where you have your planning areas 4 and 5, the more environmentally sensitive rural areas. Where you see this kind of red color is where you have metropolitan areas, planning areas 1 and 2, where there's more growth. Often it was the environmental features that dictated that certain growth didn't occur in some of these more pristine areas. Regional planning in the state of New Jersey, again, not a new concept. And here we have a sort of historical look at different planning approaches from a regional perspective in the state from 1921 up into ones that we're very familiar with, the State Development Guide Plan, the Pinelands Protection Act in 1979, the State Planning Act in 1985, and then in 2004, you have the Highlands Water Protection and Planning Act, which is why we are where we are today. And then in 2008, just last year, the adoption of the Highlands Regional Master Plan. A timeline on our own regional master plan. In 2001, the state plan designated this region, the Highlands region, as New Jersey's first special resource area. So when I said we were an outgrowth from the state plan, I was referring to this. The state plan recognized that this area needed greater protection. It recognized the need for regional planning, and it set that forth in that 2001 plan. There had been governors before Governor McGreevy that had actually set up task forces to look at the region and advise those governors on protection, but it was only in September 19th of 2003 that Governor McGreevy put together the Highlands Task Force that actually ended up advising and finally getting the Highlands Act. August 10th, 2004 was the Highlands Water Protection and Planning Act. That's when it became law. November 30th of 2006 was the first draft of the Regional Master Plan. It was released and had a public comment period. November 19th, nearly a year later, was the final draft Regional Master Plan. It was released and we did an additional public comment period, even though we had fulfilled the statutory obligation. Again, the council felt it was very important to open up, be transparent, and take public comments. Thus, July 17th, 2008, at that point we had received more than 4,000 comments from over 1,000 respondents on the regional master plan, and the changes were made to the plan, to those two drafts before, based on public comments received. The master plan was adopted on that date by the Highlands Council. It then went into a governor review period, and the governor during that time had the opportunity, should he so have wished, to veto the minutes of that July 17th meeting. The governor, however, chose not to. He approved the Highlands Regional Master Plan and signed Executive Order 114. And it was through that executive order that the governor provided the $10 million for the Highlands Development Credit Bank from the Transfer of Development Rights State Bank. September 8th, the Highlands Regional Master Plan became effective. And then December 8th, 2009, is when petitions for plan conformance are due according to the statute, for any municipality with lands in the preservation area, for those preservation area lands. The plan is mandatory and they must get their petitions, their conforming petitions, in by that date. However, because of Executive Order 114, there's also a link to COA planning, and towns that had an opportunity to extend their period where they were required to get their COA plans, Council Affordable Housing Plans, into the state. And when they afforded themselves with that opportunity through a resolution to COA, they also had to do a notice of intent to the Highlands Regional Master Plan, to the Highlands Regional Council. And thus, they have to have their petitions in for their fair share plan by that December 8th, 2009. So it's really linked us together. And as a result of that, we've got an awful lot more work than we ever anticipated when we adopted the plan. So that's the cover of our now adopted and effective Highlands Regional Master Plan. Just a little bit about the region. Because we are engaged in regional planning, we believe it's important to understand the region, the federal region. It stretches from Pennsylvania up into New Jersey, New York, and into Connecticut, an area recognized for its critical environmental features and its importance. And the U.S. Forest Study had done much of the work that formed a basis for some of the Highlands Regional Master Plan work. There was also the Highlands Conservation Act, which was signed November 30, 2004 by President Bush, and that act was designed to assist the four states in conserving land and natural resources in the region through federal assistance for land conservation projects. This slide shows you land use change in the New York, New Jersey Highlands. So we're this area here below the line. This is New Jersey. From 1972, there it is, through 1984, 1995, and 2000, and you see the growth of the red. What that really shows you is the fragmented nature of that development, which really was the issue and the problem for the region, for the protection of those critical resources. And it was this kind of development that led to the recognition in the state plan and by the governor at the time of a need for regional planning. Due to the 2004 Act, the region is recognized by legislation as shown on this slide. You have an area in parts of seven counties. You have 88 municipalities entirely within the region. The region is some 860,000 acres, and it's further divided into the preservation area, which is shown in the dark green, which is about 415,000 acres. And the planning area, which is yellow striped, which is another, that second figure is incorrect, but it's approximately 50% preservation and planning. As I said, it encompasses those 88 municipalities. Only five of those municipalities are entirely within the planning area. Five entirely in the preservation area, 36 entirely in the planning area, and the rest of them are split, which makes planning even more difficult. And keeping in mind that in the preservation area, there are strict Department of Environmental Protection rules that went into effect, and the plan is mandatory in that area. In the yellow striped area, the planning area, the DEP rules are not in effect, and even if a town conforms, they do not conform to those, they don't take on those DEP rules. However, if they conform, it is to the regional master plan. The main reason for the critical nature of protection of the region are the water supplies in the area. If you look at the map here, the area of the Highlands, which is shown here in green, is approximately 17% of the land base of the state of New Jersey, but it provides water for over half the population, some 64%, 5.4 million residents. And you can see the colors outside of the Highlands region. These areas get some percentage of their water from the Highlands area. So the critical need to protect the water resources is a state issue, a statewide issue of importance. Not only does it protect the water supplies for the residents of the area who depend mainly on groundwater, private wells, but also for those areas outside that depend on the surface water in the reservoirs for their supplies. Now, the act was based, sorry, the plan was based on the act, and the act set forth region-wide goals for both the preservation and the planning area. This particular slide is a page within the plan, and it's taken directly from the act. And what you're seeing first and foremost are the goals that are set forth for both preservation and planning area. And they are to protect, restore, and enhance the quality and quantity of surface and ground waters, preserve farmland and historic sites and other historic resources, preserve outdoor recreation opportunities, including hunting and fishing on publicly owned land, promote conservation of water resources, and promote brownfield remediation and redevelopment. There were a separate set of goals set forth in the Act for the preservation area, to preserve extensive and to the maximum extent possible contiguous areas of land in the natural state, protecting the natural, scenic, and other resources of the region, and that includes contiguous forests, wetlands, vegetated stream, corridors, steep slopes, critical habitat, fauna, and flora. Promoting compatible agricultural, horticultural, recreational, cultural uses while protecting the environment, and prohibiting or limiting to the maximum extent possible construction or development which is incompatible with the preservation of this unique area. Now, these are the words directly from the Act. And separate and apart from that, there were goals specific to the planning area, similar but yet different. Preserving to the maximum extent possible any environmentally sensitive lands and other lands needed for recreation and conservation purposes. Protecting and maintaining the essential character of the Highlands environment. And in this case, the language applied to agriculture is somewhat different. It says promote the continuation and expansion of agricultural, horticultural, recreational, and cultural uses and opportunities. The next goal is very different from anything in the preservation area. It is consistent with the State Development and Redevelopment Plan, known as the State Plan, to encourage smart growth strategies and principles, appropriate patterns of compatible residential, commercial, industrial development, redevelopment, and economic growth. Importantly, it says, in or adjacent to areas already utilized for such purposes, and discourage piecemeal, scattered, and inappropriate development in order to accommodate local and regional growth and economic development in an orderly way while protecting the Highlands environment from the individual and cumulative adverse impacts thereof. And the final goal for the specific to the planning area was to promote a sound and balanced transportation system consistent with smart growth strategies and principles. And note that that transportation goal is just for the planning area, which is a little difficult when the roads go straight through from, often from planning area through the preservation area. Also, the Act required that we did a resource assessment. Given what we are required to protect, and you saw, you know, many of those issues, critical habitat, forested lands, we started off with a resource assessment. That assessment was done across the region, irrespective of planning or preservation area. We looked simply at the resources. The Act required that we would determine the amount and type of development that could be accommodated while sustaining the environment. Mm-hmm. And we looked at issues, again, mandated by the Act, surface and groundwater, terrestrial and aquatic ecology, scenic and historic attributes, open space, farmland, and recreation. And based on that resource assessment, we were to establish the land use policies required to protect those and enhance those resources. In order to do that, we were also required to do a land use capability map. We have such an incredible amount of data and analysis that one map could not sufficiently have held the information we needed to show the land use capability. Thus, we did a map series. The first of those maps I'll speak a little more about is the land use capability zone map. We did a water availability map looking at natural systems. We did a land use capability public community water systems map, making sure we knew where there were public water supply systems. Land use capability domestic sewage facility, again, making sure we knew where that infrastructure existed. It's important from a smart growth perspective. It's also important to know where these features are so that you know to protect more pristine areas. and land use capability septic system yield map, again looking to capacity issues, what was the future in terms of septics in the region, so that you could determine the sustainable growth the region could have. This is a slide that looks at the model that was created to do the land use capability zone map, the first of those. What we did is we created different zones and we fed indicators into a model to create this map. And to give you an idea, for example, the first of the primary zones is what we call the protection zone. It is where you have your most pristine lands, your largely forested areas, and they're shown in this map depicted as green. So one of the main indicators that fed the model there would have been forested lands. The second primary zone are the lands shown in the brown and tan colours. That's our conservation zone. In many cases that would be your open lands that are in agricultural use. They're not, they may have woods on them, but they wouldn't be as forested as that protection area lands. So again, the indicator feeding in there would be open lands, often in ag use. And the final primary zone is, you can see it here in this sort of yellowish colour, it's called our existing community zone. And it's where a certain level of development has already occurred on the ground. We recognise it, and it's measured by things like indicators such as infrastructure, sewer and public water, impervious surface. So really you can see the overlay zone map captures what is in existence, looks at the resources, but captures sort of the reality on the ground. When this was designed by the staff of the Highlands Council under the direction of the Highlands Council, 70% of the land automatically fell into one of those primary zones. And then we went through conflict resolution to work on the remaining 30%. And I think what that shows you is that the model really worked to capture the resources. There you have those three primary zones, protection zone, conservation zone, and existing community zone. Further, there are four sub-zones. In the conservation zone and the existing community zone, we recognize that there are environmental features, and we capture those as environmental constrained sub-zones. Important knowledge for planning. Often in an existing community, it might be a ridge, forested ridge, something of that nature. There's also a lake community sub-zone, which was in response to comments received on that first draft of the regional master plan, where you have existing community, but it's on the edge of a lake. So we took lakes that were 10 acres or greater, and where that existing community intersected with 1,000 feet around a lake, that was captured as a lake community subzone. Again, a special kind of planning needed to recognize the lake and to protect that lake. And finally, a wildlife management subzone, which merely recognizes wildlife management areas. They are what they are, federal and state, but we call those out. And thus, you end up with the first of the map series, the Land Use Capability Zone map. Around this room, you actually can see the entire series. It's repeated of those different maps. To give you an idea of how this sort of plays out at a municipal level, and these slides are taken from the informational sessions that we give to municipalities. Municipalities call us and they ask us to come out to public meetings, and we come out and we have a PowerPoint presentation which is geared towards that town. We do give them an overview of the entire region, but then we focus on their town, and it gives them an understanding of how we see them. And what we're working on right now with municipalities is seeing, did we get it right? A lot of times we recognize they have more information than us, and there's an opportunity to correct factual information on the ground. So there might be things like whether there is infrastructure in certain areas of the town. Did we capture that public water? Did we capture the sewer? In this case, you're looking at Holland Township, and we like to talk about where the township is within the region. We always focus back on the region. Here you have Holland Township in the Highlands region. This map here shows you preservation area shown in green colour and planning area, so they get a clear indication of how they're affected by the plan. Mandatory here, voluntary here in the planning area. We look at the landscape using an aerial, we look at the landscape of Holland Township, and we talk about that those overlay zones that I explained to you in that model. And here where it really becomes clear is, having talked about the protection zone, and you can see through here where these forested lands are, where the open lands will fall into primarily into the conservation zone. And here we capture the existing community zone where there's more development on the ground. You see it here, existing community, conservation zone lands, protection zone, and here actually you have a wildlife management area. And this way, towns, they recognize themselves and they understand why we captured them the way we did. Some towns, before we started showing them these maps, would say, well, we don't want to be an existing community. And we would explain, we didn't make you one, that's what's there. And we show them this, and it gains a better understanding and a beginning of a true partnership with these towns. In this one, looking at Independence Township, what we're showing here is wellhead protection in here, where you have public water supply wells. We want to make sure that nothing goes into the ground here that contaminates those wells. We have prime groundwater recharge areas shown in the purple area. Again, it's critical to know this for planning. And here in the blue, you have karst topography, limestone, those kind of features. They all relate back to the plan and to certain goals, policies, and objectives in the plan to protect these areas. Here, looking at Alamuchi Township, we look at the topography of the town, and you see here the slopes. We go from 10% grade to 15% to 20% grade. Now we're showing in this, we're showing streams, open water buffers, and vernal pools. Again, relates to goals, policies, and objectives in the plan to recognize these features and protect them, and share that information with the towns. Kinlong Borough, here we're looking at existing infrastructure. And this is one where currently we're working with these towns to see, we're doing a build out with them and we're looking at a block and lot level. Did we get this information correct? We're not looking at things like areas that are were recognized in the past as able to receive public water systems or sewer systems. We're looking at actual pipes in the ground. What we're seeing here is these areas actually are supplied by public community water systems. And here we have domestic sewage facilities. Again, pipes in the ground, not sewer service areas where there was potential for the future, but capturing actual pipes in the ground where homes are served or businesses by domestic sewage. And this mapping is a mapping that the Highlands Council did, and it shows impervious surface. And it was one of those indicators that led into existing communities. And all of this information, I know we're going to probably overwhelm you at these early stages with information. Hopefully some of the terminology will become more familiar. But all of this does feed into the program and to recognizing these features and this mapping and its importance for the program. Existing and priority open space areas. Again, the Act called upon the Council to recognize areas that were important for preservation into the future, to target those areas. And indeed, the Act went further and called for a confidential list for open space priorities and for agricultural priorities to be transmitted to Green Acres for the open space and the State Agricultural Development Committee for farmland preservation. We met with both those organizations as well to look, state agencies, to look at the methodology used by the council to make sure that we were sort of in concert with their approaches as well. And that's because we're hoping then that they will work with us to try to promote the preservation of those particular areas for their critical value. So as we go around to the towns, we have a mapping that we show where they have preserved open space and recognize the work that's been done through the state, through the county programs and through municipal programs to preserve lands and federal programs as well. We then show them where we see conservation priority areas. Here it is with the preserved lands. We show them that, and as part of working with the towns in their environmental resource inventory, they will recognize our targets. It doesn't mean they can't have their own targets, they absolutely can, but it's just information that they should understand, you know, why these are earmarked for as priorities by the council. Likewise, we have agricultural priority areas here shown on this map. So for the conservation priority area, nearly 275,000 acres of the Highlands region are preserved open space or preserved farmland in that combination of the federal, state, county, or municipal, including non-profit and private ownership. And the Highlands Council identified those lands with the greatest resource value as being priorities for the future, often linkages and things of that nature. And that became our priority areas. We also, because of the mandates of the Act, created a special environmental zone. The Act said that we had to recognize areas where no development should occur. And in order to do that, we looked at preservation priorities, we looked at preserved areas, and we looked at clustering of these lands, and we looked at the most critical areas for protection. And 19,000 acres were planned to be permanently preserved using a variety of tools, including, of course, transfer of development rights program. Likewise, with the agricultural priority areas, a similar approach at looking at existing and then looking at future based on resources and creating a priority area. The confidential list I spoke of are subsets of these priority areas. We also did a Highlands Regional Master Plan Smart Growth Analysis. It was required because there is an opportunity, and again this comes into play with transfer development rights, to look at where there is a potential for future growth in the area. We looked at issues such as transportation, we looked at population density, we looked at existing infrastructure, and did an analysis then of what the future might be. Now, it must be said that in terms of the Highlands Regional Master Plan, any growth is discretionary. It is the will of that municipality. It cannot be mandated by the council. We encourage towns to look at it and to explore feasibility. We have, for example, transfer development right feasibility grant, where towns that have the desire, or at least are considering increasing density, to avail of these grants in order to do feasibility studies to see if they indeed have the infrastructure to support that extra development. In terms of the TDR program, there's going to be a sort of split role moving forward. The Highlands Council stays involved, and the Development Credit Bank now takes up its role. In terms of the role of the Highlands Council, it is to establish that TDR program, including working with municipalities to establish TDR receiving zones. We were required by the Act to show where there was potential, and we did an analysis, and it's in the plan, but those are potential and possible. Feasibility studies have to be done, and the town has to desire that growth. We were required to establish an initial Highlands development credit value. It's currently 16,000 per credit, and Jeff can explain a little more about that. We did work with professionals and specialists in that area, and we did look at the Pinelands model. We were to determine the Highlands development credit allocation for sending zone parcels. So those parcels that wish to avail themselves of this opportunity, how do you determine the allocation? That work has been done. Assess the program at specified intervals for improvements. We'll continue to do that, just as we continue to look at sending zones, continue to look at receiving zones. Work to pass new TDR legislation, providing greater opportunities for the use of HDCs. And this is really critical moving forward. In the case of the Pinelands, which did create a very successful program, they had mandatory receiving areas. We do not. It's an added complication for the Highlands program. We would like to see, and have worked with Susan on issues such as this. There's a state TDR program, but there's also a bill that is being considered that would allow for the use of Highlands credits and Pinelands credits throughout the state, and bring some of the benefits our program brings throughout the state as well. These would be great benefits to us, because if we could have a greater receiving area, there's more potential for this program to be successful. Certainly, we're very grateful to be where we are today, sitting here with you and having $10 million in seed money, because without that, and I was most grateful to the State TDR Bank for facilitating that, without that, we wouldn't be having, I don't think, as successful a kickoff. So with that, I'd like to turn it over to Jeff and ask him to, now that I've given you a really sort of touch of what it's like at the Highlands Council level and the plan level, to now dig a little deeper into the TDR program.
Thank you very much, Eileen, and just like to extend my welcome to all of the board members. Thank you for agreeing to serve in a very important role, critical role, going forward here. I'm going to provide just a very brief overview on Highlands TDR program as it's presented in the Regional Master Plan. We're not going to get into a lot of the details today. We're going to save that for a later meeting when we have more time, and I can provide you with background information so you'll feel a little bit more up to speed as to where we are. But again, this is just a fairly quick overview on the program itself. The TDR program is meant to be a regional program, although likely it will start more at an intra-municipal level where we have markets being established in one jurisdiction. And I'll talk about that in a minute. But it's meant overall to be a regional program where we have transfer of development rights, here termed Highlands Development Credits, to further the goals of the Highlands Act. The idea behind TDR generally is that a community uses market forces to encourage transfer of development potential from areas that the community wants to preserve, called sending zones or sending areas, to areas that are more appropriate and have the infrastructure to support increased growth. And those are called receiving zones. Now, in exchange for restricting the development potential on your property in perpetuity, landowners in sending zones receive Highlands Development Credits, HDCs, to offset that lost development opportunity caused or occasioned by the Highlands Act, and that is critical. These credits, the HDCs, that get purchased, allow one who purchased those credits to build in receiving zones at a higher density or intensity than would normally be otherwise permitted by the underlying zoning. So if you could build at one unit per acre, and now with the purchase of credits you can build at 5 units to the acre, you've increased the development opportunities. And there are incentives and benefits to communities who agree to serve as receiving zones. But going back to Eileen's point moments ago, all growth under the Highlands Act, under the Highlands Regional Master Plan, is discretionary. That includes the fact that receiving zones under the Highlands TDR program are voluntary. It does create an added complication. There's no question about that. We are working to address that as best we can and to create as much demand for credits as this program moves forward. Under the goals, policies, and objectives of the TDR program, certain lands are eligible to serve as receiving zones, and these again are spelled out in the regional master plan. These include lands located in the existing community zone. And we spoke about the various overlay zones, the existing community zone being where most of the development already exists on the ground today, and we would be looking at infill opportunities and redevelopment opportunities within the existing community zone. Lands located within a Highlands redevelopment area. Those are areas that get designated by the Highlands Council. Those can include areas in the preservation area. But again, they go through a very through a designation process that's overseen by the council. Lands that are located within the conservation zone, provided that the designated receiving zone is consistent with standards in the regional master plan, and the development does not conflict with the maintenance of viable agriculture. There's a recognition that there are lands within the conservation zone, even though they might not currently be developed, might be adjacent to existing development, where the extension of infrastructure may be appropriate, and those lands could serve as potential receiving zones. But that will certainly be a much higher hurdle to overcome than if you are looking to create receiving zones within your existing community zone. And then last but not least are lands located within a municipality outside of the Highlands region, but within the 7 Highlands counties. We have the ability to transfer development potential from within the region to communities outside of the region, Highlands region, but within the 7 Highlands counties. And I'll give you an example. One of the communities that is currently going through our TDR receiving zone feasibility grant program is the city of Clifton. So, it is in Passaic County, one of the 7 Highlands counties, and they are looking at potentially serving as a receiving zone for Highlands Development Credits. We are, the Highlands Council was required to identify potential receiving zones within the planning area, and the Highlands Act set a goal of identifying 4% of the planning area as a goal, and that's 17,776 acres. Now, that goal is based on compatibility with existing infrastructure and the ecosystems of the planning area. We performed a preliminary regional analysis. We only looked at the existing community zone. We looked at existing environmental constraints. We looked at where existing infrastructure is. And we performed, again, a region-wide analysis that's going to require much more specific local evaluations as we move forward. Under this analysis, which is shown on the map to the right, and it is difficult to see, but you'll see both red and blue areas. Those areas combined approximate about 12,000 acres. The vast majority are what we call redevelopment and infill opportunities. Those are identified by the red. The other areas are blue, or what we call greenfield opportunities. Those are areas where there is not existing development, but the extension of appropriate infrastructure makes sense given the location of transportation, of the extension, appropriate extension of infrastructure in those areas. For the sending zones, all lands located within the preservation area are eligible to be sending zones, except for those that are located in the existing community overlay zone or approved Highlands redevelopment areas. And then upon municipal conformance, for lands located within the planning area, they are also eligible to serve as sending zones when a municipality, again, voluntarily conforms, except for those lands located in the existing community zone or Highlands redevelopment area. Excuse me. There's an important caveat to that, in that you might be located in those lands, but you have to have a certain aggregate amount of land or have lost a certain number of development opportunities. And the council said, we're looking at larger acreage, larger parcels, 5 acres in size. But if you have less than 5 acres, you must have lost at least 3 development opportunities. If you pass through those 2 gates, then you are eligible to be considered for getting an allocation of Highlands development credits. And again, I'm not going to go through that process. That is a lengthy discussion, and we will tackle that at a future meeting. The other important thing is that even where these thresholds are met, and you pass through these gates, there are still situations where, because of environmental constraints that existed on your property prior to the Highlands Act, because of freshwater wetlands rules, or stormwater protection rules, steep slopes based on municipal ordinances, you are not going to be able to develop that property. We recognize that, and those lands get pulled away from any type of allocation. So it's important to understand that what we're trying to deal with is awarding credits or allocating credits to parcels of land that have been affected by the Act, not that have been affected by other legislative or regulatory regimes here in the state. The council has established a large planning grants program. Council has more than $21 million in grant funding to assist municipalities and counties with the reasonable expenses related to planning performance. We have 68 municipalities are now moving through this grant process to help them go through the process of assessing and then conforming to the regional master plan. Under the Highlands Act, it established the Highlands Protection Fund. It's a special non-lapsing fund, which was, again, dedicated in accordance with the Highlands Act. It's in addition to the existing balance, over $4.5 million is funded, in funding is provided to the Highlands Council for planning grants. Taking these grant dollars, the council established a TDR Receiving Zone Feasibility Grant Program back in the spring of 2007. It established a $1 million grant program. And under this program, municipalities can receive up to $25,000 in planning aid to help them assess the feasibility of establishing receiving zones. The council recognized that upfront planning for TDR requires an upfront cost. And we needed to help defray that cost if we were going to get communities to think seriously about serving as receiving zones. So under the feasibility study, there's a number of grant activities. Identifying and evaluating potential receiving zones, providing a description of the physical characteristics of the zone, and what the zoning is currently on the ground, conducting a real estate market analysis to understand what unit prices are like within the potential receiving zone area, coming up with 2 development scenarios for what that potential receiving zone may look like based upon the results of the real estate market analysis. So all of these things get assessed under these feasibility grants. And currently we have 5 municipalities that are working through the grant activities right now. We certainly are pushing to get more municipalities to move forward because establishing the designated receiving zones is critical to the success of the program. Eileen had highlighted for you all the role of the Highlands Council with respect to the program, and I'm just briefly going to cover the role of the bank. The bank will issue what's called HDC certificates. These are certificates certifying the number of credits you received. And you get a certificate after you have deed restricted your property. The idea of that certificate is it's now fungible. You can actually transact on those credits. And the bank will certify that you have been allocated a certain number of credits from the council. You have the appropriate deed or conservation restriction in place. And now you have credits that are tradable. The bank will serve as the administrator of the TDR program. We will track those credits. We will help facilitate transactions by serving as an information clearinghouse and bringing buyers and sellers together. And as Scott mentioned, the bank will serve as a buyer and seller of Highlands Development credits as the last resort. Although in this interim period, as we're working to establish receiving zones, that will be a critical part for the bank to work.
Jeff, is the characterization of the bank as a buyer and seller of last resort, is that a statutory term, or is that something the Highlands Council has established?
Under the regional master plan, that's how the council has foreseen the Highlands Development Credit Bank's role, because the bank is itself a creature of the council under the Highlands.
We like to leave you with this, three of the inhabitants who are looking after the Wanaku Reservoir.
Okay, thanks Eileen, thanks Jeff. As everyone can see, there was a lot that went into the last few years, and the staff was really doing all the heavy lifting while the council was meeting and putting our input into it, but they certainly have come a long way. And that's the good news. You know, we sit here ready to put the mechanism in place because of the work over the last couple of years by Eileen and the staff. So thank you again for that. I know there's some kind of mundane stuff, but it's important in the formation of the bank that we do need to attend to, because it is the beginning, and we're going to start with how, you know, some of the stuff like when we're going to meet.
Could you talk a little louder, please?
I'm sorry, Hank. I am a little under the weather right now.
Okay,
so
I'm sorry about that. Move the thing closer to you.
I can do that.
Sounds like a little mumbles here.
Oh, which reminds me, did I hear someone come on the phone? Eric, did you join us?
It's Eric.
Okay, so Eric Peterson is with us. Thank you.
Yeah, I came on while Eileen was speaking.
I heard the beep. Okay, thank you. We also have another member on the phone. Michael Halpin's on the phone also.
How you doing, Eric?
Okay, so our first order of business is we need to approve our meeting calendar. In your package is a resolution detailing that. So at this point, hopefully everyone's had a chance to look at it, and I would accept a resolution to accept this, a motion to accept this resolution.
So moved.
Thank you. Do I have a second?
Second.
Thank you, John. Is there any discussion by the board on this?
Yeah. Well, what were the actual dates, though? I just see the resolution.
That's true. Thank you.
I pick up on the actual calendar.
Yeah, this is Eileen speaking. What we did is we imitated what we did at the council level for this. In working with the members and in trying to get this first meeting together, we find that it is difficult to schedule meetings. So we've talked what we have to take into consideration the regular council scheduled meetings and the opportunity to meet with all of you and the schedules that each of you face. And what we'd like to look at, if possible, for the members is the first Thursdays of each month at 1 p.m. as we are today. And if what the resolution does is it allows me to work with you if there are any issues. If there aren't any issues, that would be the first Thursday of every month, 1 p.m.
That's good. And as evidenced today, some members, although we encourage everyone to attend in person, sometimes things come up that will keep that from happening. So you can attend by the phone, and you will have the same privileges and rights as if you're sitting here. So that's important to note also. Okay, so we do have a resolution in a second. Again, any board members with any comments before I open it up to the public?
The one PM is locked. You can't move to an earlier time of the day.
No, I wouldn't say we're locked in it. I would just say that it would be once at the discretion of the chairperson, as I hear that possibly we're having trouble gathering. One thing that I did appreciate that John did at the council level was spread out the meetings at different times. Because certainly 10 o'clock works better for some people, 4 o'clock for others. But for the time being, at least for the first couple, I think we'll try and standardize it to get people starting to think about what the normal meeting date and time is. But then we'll see how it goes from there. And maybe if I hear feedback from other members that they would appreciate different times of the day. And feel free to reach out and tell me those types of things. How are we communicating by email? Is everyone just has their personal selected addresses that we'll all use?
Or? Yes, we got contact information from each of the members, and what we do is we send out the packets via email to all the members in advance of meetings, and we'll send out the agenda, we also post the agenda, and then a couple of days before the meeting we'll post the packets as well.
Okay.
And if members, what I did get into the habit of doing with the council is sending out the packets and then following up with an email with no packet attached so that those who for some reason maybe went through spam or it was too large, didn't get it, they have an opportunity to get back to me and tell me that they didn't receive the packet.
And if someone really...
Future meetings, we'll get a summarization of what Eileen just spoke about and what Jeff spoke about.
Yes, we've posted the PowerPoint. We posted it to the website. We'll be in the habit of doing that. We PDF it. We post it to the website to the calendar page. So
calendar page? Okay.
Yes.
I'm on the website right now. I'm just looking for it. Okay. Go ahead.
Okay. Yeah, it should be on the calendar page at today's date, and that's where the PowerPoint will be posted.
Okay.
Confidential
all right.
items.
Thank you.
If there's ever a confidential item that's not...
confidential items, I will send them to you. They will be marked confidential. Mm-hmm. And, of course, we ask that members then do not share them with anybody. When they become public, we post them again, because sometimes they become public the day of the meeting. It depends what the item is.
Okay.
Tom will guide us as to what remains confidential and the reason for that and the length. But we very rarely deal with confidential. It's generally personal matters and contract issues.
Any other comments or questions from board members on this resolution?
So the next meeting is March 5th, 1 p.m. under this resolution.
That would be correct.
I'll open it up to the public. Would any member of the public like to speak to this matter? Hearing none, I'll ask one. Oh, did I miss it? Come forward. And just so everyone knows, any public comment, I'm going to follow the protocol that has been in place with the full council. I would ask people to come forward, identify themselves, limit their comments to 3 minutes, and hopefully stay on track for what the issue that they're speaking, whether it be a resolution or at the end of the meeting when we have open comments. But at this point, I would ask that you stay on track and just discuss the resolution. So if you can just identify yourself in this post.
Are we being taped?
Yes.
My comments have nothing to do with the resolution. They have to do with your PowerPoint presentation and the formation of this board. And I have roughly 6 minutes here, maybe five if I go through.
Well, I'm asking you to discuss the calendar. I'll give you a little leeway later on.
Are there more public comments today?
Yes.
Okay,
this is just
fine.
About the resolution.
Fine.
Okay. Anyone else with any comments to this resolution? Okay. Hearing none, I'm going to close the public portion. Can we have a roll call, please?
Let me take it.
Please.
Dr. Kraft?
Yes.
Davis?
Yes.
Alvin?
Yes.
Lipstein?
Yes.
Baglione?
Yes.
Peterson?
Yes.
Siegel?
Yes.
Weingart?
Yes.
Pointer?
Yes.
The motion is approved. The resolution is approved.
Okay, the second resolution we have is our selection of newspapers. Following that one?
I'll move that resolution.
Thank you. Do I have a second?
Second.
Thank you. Let me just read the resolution on this, though. The bank hereby designates the Daily Record of Morris County, the Express Times, the Star Ledger of Newark, the New Jersey Herald, the Record of Bergen, the Herald and News as its official newspapers for the Highlands region for Open Public Meetings Act purposes as being those which have the greatest likelihood of informing the public of bank meetings. So, with that, we have a motion and a second. Any comments?
These notices, of course, also will be just as a place on the website.
Absolutely.
Anyone else with any questions or comments? Board members? No? Any member of the public like to speak to this resolution?
I would just like to ask.
Come forward, please. State your name for the record.
Mike, please.
I'm sorry?
Go to the mic.
It's just a very
just
simple.
Just state your name for the record first.
Jody Anderson.
Thank you.
It says the Star Ledger of Newark. And my question is, is it going to be in all editions of the Star Ledger or only in the Highlands area? Because there have been lots of times when there has not been information or there any articles in the Essex County edition where it has been in even the Easton Express.
Okay, I think maybe we can get you in there. Which leads me to something I left out, that normally the board will, again, following the council's protocol, that we will not engage in a dialogue. We'll collect any questions or anything. But I think that certainly falls under something that either we do know the answer to or would have to go get it.
It's the official notice, the newspaper notice will provide public notice in these newspapers. Where they fall on that day would be dependent on the newspaper. What we've done, though, is provide a broad range of newspapers to ensure that the most broad geographic distribution of public notice will be available. But as we alluded to before, we also will be posting everything on the council's website, including the agenda and any particular items that will be on that agenda.
Could you make a comment to the Star Ledger that there are people in areas of the state that are not living in the Highlands area who are concerned?
Well, that's one of the reasons why we're putting in the Star Ledger. It does have a broader distribution than just the Highlands localized newspapers.
But I'm saying that it's not often in the Essex edition.
I can make a board member comment to your point. The Star Ledger is discontinuing its separate editions. It's going to be one newspaper. So your specific.
So it should be in every issue? I hope so.
You're talking about two different things. You're talking about articles concerning the meetings as opposed to a notice.
Yes, this is just the public notice.
Exactly right. Legal notice.
Any other member of the public like to speak to this matter? Okay, hearing none, I'm going to close the public portion. Any other board members' comments, questions before I call for a vote? We'll call the vote.
Kraft?
Yes.
Davis?
Yes.
Halpin?
Yes.
Lipstein?
Yes.
Magnillon?
Yes.
Peterson?
Yes.
Siegel?
Yes.
Weingart?
Yes.
White?
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, that's our official items that we need to take care of. Now there's a couple of general items that we can begin our conversations about regarding the business of the bank. The first one that we'll bring up in I'll let Eileen join in on that, but it's the bylaws of the bank, which are very important, which we need. I know the staff has prepared a set of draft bylaws that will be going out. We discussed maybe in the next week or two. I think they'll be ready to go out. I would ask every the other board members to start reviewing them. And if you have any comments, to reach out to Eileen or Tom. Sure, they'll be happy to discuss or place on our agenda any item that needs to be further discussed at the full board. Eileen, do you want to give a little background?
I'm going to ask Tom to give a background on the bylaws that he
We have prepared a draft that we will be sending around, but just to let bank board members know, what we've done is we examined the Highlands Council bylaws, we examined the state TDR bank bylaws, the Highlands Development Credit Bank bylaws to look for common elements in that draft, or that a draft we hope is representative of bringing all those issues together. Well, the council members of Highlands Council debated their bylaws extensively, so what we attempted to do is take a lot of the analysis that went into the formation of the Highlands Council and resolve a lot of those things consistent with the Highlands Council's bylaws, so we did borrow heavily from the Highlands Council.
That probably saved us about 3 meetings.
I would hope so. So we'll be sending that around quickly, and if you'd like, we can send around the bylaws of the respective from the state and from the Highlands, if you'd like.
And as Eileen described to me earlier, we need the bylaws to be in place for us to then elect our officers. Until we have those bylaws, we don't have the mechanism in place to decide our treasurer and vice chairperson.
What I'd ask, Scott, is that if you have comments, get them back to me. And it's with anything. If you get it back to me, then I'll work with staff to get to respond to those comments to you individually and to you as a board.
Right. Thank you.
I would like to request copies of the bylaws from the other agencies. Sure. Just to compare. Thanks.
And then we're also going to be creating a couple committees, standing committees, that we've been discussing in-house with the staff as to the makeup of the committees, how many members, who the members will be. That will be for sometime in the future. We'll be placing them in. But we're going to have the policy committee, which is going to be working with us as a full board to oversee the administration and the operation of the bank. And then we're also going to have a finance committee, which is going to be focused on the operating budget, the capital budget, and how the bank's funding takes place. So once we get a little bit more comfortable in how we're going to be continuing, we'll get those committees quickly in place. Once I get to know everyone, and maybe I can feel for where I think people would be best suited to help contribute to the board, I'll ask if you have the time and can sit on those committees. Do you want to add anything to that, Eileen or Tom or Jeff?
Jeff, do you want to add anything?
Okay. At this point, we've pretty much gone through most of the stuff that we thought we needed to attend to on at this meeting. I know PowerPoint presentations really touched on a lot of the deep subjects that the council's been grappling with over the last few years. And I look to Eileen and the entire staff to bring the new members here up to speed as best they feel that they can grasp the subject matter as quick as they can. And I think it'll help everyone to really see the background of a lot of the items. Is there anything, nothing else to, before I open it up to the public at this point? We're okay? Okay, at this point I'm going to open it up to the public for comment. Again, I'm going to remind everyone that, and I see really a lot of familiar faces out there, so I don't think it'll be new to anyone out there, but I would ask you to limit your comments. We'll set a focus of 3 minutes, but I understand, you know, people like to finish up their thoughts. I would ask them to remember that we're not engaging in a dialogue. You can bring up questions, but we won't be responding to them, but the staff will, as best they can, quickly get answers back to you when they can. So at this point, I think I would ask if they would like to make any comments. If you'd identify yourself for the record, please.
My name is Deborah Post, Chester Township. I would like to begin my comments by submitting two documents for attachment to this meeting's minutes, with the request that those of you on this board new to the process actually read them. The first are comments regarding TDRs that I gave to the Highlands Council way back in December 1st of 2005, when we still believed that the TDR mandate legislated in the Highlands Act would be implemented on a timely and fair basis. Delay, unfortunately, was always the well-crafted strategy. The second are comments submitted to the Highlands Council in connection with the Regional Master Plan, which addressed the TDR printing press approach of the plan that renders the HDCs inflatable funny money. I'd like to address the issue of transparency, a subject that is certainly in our political arena today. How are you going to ensure that all transactions of TDRs are transparent and disclosed timely? How are you going to ensure that all buyers and all sellers of TDRs are transparent and knowledge of the marketplace buyers available to all? How are you going to ensure transparency of transaction pricing? How are you going to ensure that the TDRs don't realize their potential as a boon for the corrupt politics of New Jersey? Based on my review of the GSPT funds used in Morris County, and I'm clarifying Morris County, there is little doubt in my mind that the already rich and politically connected have received the lion's share of the trust funding, while the little guy has rarely participated. Will you disclose the data detail and base analysis that Integra used in valuing the HDCs? Is valuation data to be kept as big a secret by this board as the priority list of properties developed by the council, but deemed unsuitable for the public's eye? The HDC valuation data, we are told, is largely tax data, a valuation approach not accepted by any court in any state as useful in the determination of fair market value. Federal and state courts have consistently defined just compensation as fair market value. The Eminent Domain Commission does not accept tax assessments as evidence of fair market value. Will this board, in contradiction of all case law, agree to use tax assessment data in valuation of HDCs? What are your plans for creating a marketplace for the HDCs? A bank without a marketplace has no real function. What are your plans for allocating the HDCs to all harmed Highlands landowners? Don't kid yourself that this is a voluntary process of application. Not one landowner volunteered their land for a regulatory taking. Last issue for today is pricing. The Highlands Council has disclosed their intentions regarding the initial market price of the HDC. I think you saw it up there at $16,000. When questioned in detail regarding the actual appraised value of the HDC per the work of the Integra consultants, i.e., the lost development value it is supposed to reflect, the TDR committee told us that the initial offering price represented a 75% discount to market. Let me repeat, a 75% discount to real value. That's right. They have set the initial TDR price at approximately one quarter of the development value taken from landowners by the Highlands Act. While a slight discount to market, rarely more than 3%, is typical in Wall Street pricing of IPOs, the purpose to stimulate market participation in the offering. However, any banker who recommended to his client a pricing discount to market of 75% would be immediately and soundly sacked. But here, the owners of the TDRs, the landowner stakeholders, have no representation in the process. The stakeholders aren't allowed to fire those who would misprice their asset. Continuing the tradition of the council, this board has been stacked with people with no interest in a fair, transparent, and effective program of landowner just compensation. My apologies, my sincere apologies to the newcomers, but you are not stakeholders, just more political appointees with a history of playing political ball. And the council members on this board have a four-year history of aggressive efforts to deprive landowners of their lost equity. They waited for a global financial crisis before even establishing this board. Prima facie, bad faith. The result of pricing the TDRs initially at a 75% discount to its real value is to ensure that the elderly, the cash-strapped, and the financially desperate who must walk through the door first will get the largest fleecing. This is worse than despicable. It is pure evil.
Any other member of the public like to make any comments? Just identify yourself for the record, please.
Yeah, my name's Hank Klump. I'm a farmer in Tewksbury. We own 150 acres in the preservation area. I know you don't have a dialogue, which I feel is back and forth, which solves so many problems, but on this board here, I'd like to know how many people own and farm land in the Highlands that is not in preservation and to make a living or whatever. Just to raise a hand so you don't have to say nothing if you could do that.
Well, we're allowed to talk, it's just if you can't expect us to talk.
Okay.
So we're allowed to be quiet.
All right. Question was, just raise your hand if you own property in the Highlands and preservation, not in a preservation area, or that's not been preserved. That's my only question. Nobody. Nobody. Okay. So basically, all you people up here are telling us, farmers, what to do with our land, or what we're going to get for it, which we've farmed for generations, which I kindly feel is wrong. But that's my opinion, because it's hitting us. For generations, we farm our place. The other thing that I got a problem with is 4 years. Let me put it this way. If a farmer's going to buy a piece of equipment, before he can buy his piece of equipment, he has to have funding in place before he gets it. This Highlands bill was put in, and there was no funding. Now, 4 years have passed, okay, since this thing was taking place. Not one penny has been put up for the people. You talk about a bailout. The farmers should get the bailout. And for an example, you take a $10 million, that's a joke. Our farm, before this, you know, we had offers of like $12 million for our farm, real estate value. We never wanted to do anything for it or anything. But in the same token, this bill comes along, it's our 401k, and it just cleaned us out. What are we supposed to do? You people up here have nothing to lose, but you're asking us farmers to sacrifice everything we worked for generations. Thank you very much. Eileen, I loved your presentation. It was great. But in the same token, we know what our land looks like, and we enjoy it, and we used to make a good living off of it. We can't do that anymore. We're in a preservation area and no equity, so it's gone. And the guy that we borrowed the money from, he came back to us and said, hey, we're sorry, you know, you borrowed it from us for years, which we did. But he says, you put your land up as equity. Guess what? We lost our equity. He said between 80 and 90%. Well, by golly, he's pretty close to it. So thank you very much. I just wanted to give you the point of a farmer in this thing. So thanks again. Appreciate that.
Thank you. Any other member of the public in the back? Second row. Oh, Helen, you first. State your name for the record, please.
Hello. I don't know if this is on or not. It is? Okay. Helen Heinrich. I'm representing the New Jersey Farm Bureau and want to welcome you all to what is a very important task to our membership and all the landowners in the Highlands. As you've been told, there are certain real challenges ahead of you. It sounds to me like all of you have a lot of experience that we need to face this task, and we certainly have an appreciation of how important it is to the landowners, which, as Hank has said, have been waiting for 4 years for some relief when they were promised originally that they would be taken care of and not just have lines drawn around them. So we want to make this work, and we're certainly going to do everything we can to help you and encourage you to, you know, let's get it going as fast as possible, and let's see what we can do with it.
Thank you.
Good afternoon.
State your name for the record, please.
I was just going to.
Okay.
You're way ahead of me. My name is Richard Longo. I live in Booton Township, far into Morris County, on the 540 Powerville Road. Since the passing of the Highlands Water Protection and Planning Act, my property values have been devalued and my property rights were destroyed. My wife and I have always planned to either give our property to our daughter and or her children if she married and had a family. My daughter was the ninth generation on my wife's side of the family. Live on our property. Continues to live on our property, I should say. Our grandchildren would have been the 10th generation to do so. Now they can't do it. We treasure our wayside farm. It's been a heritage of my wife's family to try to keep the farm. The farm was a lot larger at one time. Now it's broken down to lots more pieces of property. Many times in the past, we were approached by different people to sell our land, builders and others alike. We would have made a ton of money because of the town we lived in if we did sell, but we didn't. We didn't do so before this act because of our two grandchildren. On many occasions in the past, it's brought up about paying landowners who have been harmed by this act. Compensation is in the law to do so. It has been brought up at discussions at the Highland Council meetings, newspaper articles, and all over the place. Even the DEP commissioner at the time, Lisa Jackson, addressed the council on June 1st, 2006, and requested that the council submit to her the names of landowners who have come forward seeking compensation as stated in the law. Nothing's been done. August 2004, the law went into effect. It's now February 2009. I appeared before the council on June 22nd, 2006 and requested compensation, and now I'm back almost 3.5 years later. Nothing's been done. I would really, really like the fair value of what I'm entitled to, so that I can now purchase, now, before the prices get out of hand, purchase property in close proximity to our farm and give that property to my two grandchildren so that they could build their homes and live in the area where they were born and raised if they desired to do so. So, again, I say, as I said last time, you can mail the check to my wife and I, Richard and Gretchen Longo, 540 Powerville Road, Booton Township. Thank you.
Any other member of the public like to speak?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Mark Sakutansky. I'm here representing the New Jersey Highlands Coalition. We're a nonprofit organization based here in the region, working on the effective implementation of the Highlands Act. We look forward to moving forward with the work of the board here, and we're excited to see this program get off the ground. So thank you for meeting today, and thank you for the opportunity to comment. We're also excited about other funding opportunities for Highlands landowners, including reauthorization of money for the Gun State Preservation Trust and Open Space, which the governor has committed to putting on the ballot in the upcoming year. So we're looking forward to work in the legislature on open space funding, including funding for farmland and historic preservation, which will help complement the work that you will be doing here through the TDR program. So thank you again, and welcome to the Highlands Region.
Any other member of the public like to speak? Okay, hearing none, I'm going to close the public portion of this meeting. Before we adjourn, is there any comments from any of the board members?
Yeah. I just want to say that I completely appreciate what the public has said. Spent a lot of years trying to implement TDR to achieve a lot of things, growth management, land conservation, some level of equity protection or fairness, and so I just pledge to you, I will do the best that I possibly can to maximize success of this program to the extent that we can. So that's all.
Thank you, Susan. Any other board member with any comments? Okay, hearing none, I'll accept the motion to adjourn. We have a motion. Second?
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Adjourn. Thank you, everybody.